From The Conversation, this is Politics with Michelle Grattan, a podcast where we hear from politicians and experts on the issues of the day.
The activist campaign group GetUp had a bad election. In contrast to 2016, when it helped claim the scalps of a number of conservative liberals, in May, Tony Abbott was the only prize, and it could hardly take full credit for his political demise. Post-election, GetUp's critics have become even more vocal and determined to clip its wings. Most recently, Nicole Flint, the Liberal member for Boothby, who survived a GetUp campaign, accused it and the unions of, and I quote, creating an environment where abuse, harassment, intimidation, shouting people down, and even stalking became the new normal, unquote. Today, we're joined by Paul Oosting, GetUp's national director. Paul Oosting, you're in Canberra this parliamentary week. What brings you here?
Look, there are a number of really big issues that the government's moving on that we're here to see what's happening and how we can address them. Attacks on press freedom are one of the really central issues that we're concerned about and GetUp members around the country are mobilised on right now. There's the issue of the government's attempt to repeal the Medivac legislation, which is providing doctors the ability to treat those refugees and asylum seekers who are in dire medical need. And the issue of Newstart, we're seeing some breakthroughs there in terms of a number of coalition MPs who are speaking out in support. So we're here, you know, to speak to people from across party lines about how we can continue to make progress on the issues GetUp members and the wider Australian public care about.
Just on one of those issues, press freedom, are you going to run a major campaign on that?
It's deeply, deeply important to our members right now. It's absolutely the number one issue that they care about. We're trying to find a way through looking at the difficult, complex policy environment. There are clearly a range of legislative changes from across the board that have impinged on press freedoms. We've seen extreme cases of that recently with the raids, but really that's the tip of the iceberg. So we're absolutely in this campaign for the long haul. How we protect press freedoms as of today isn't entirely clear how we get there from a parliamentary and political point of view, but we've absolutely got to find a way because press freedom is central to our democracy.
Can we just go back to the election? You've expressed disappointment that GetUp's efforts in a number of seats didn't yield more results. Tony Abbott went, but not any others of your high-profile targets. Why do you think that was?
Well, we didn't set out to do the easy work. We set out to do what we saw as being the necessary work, and that was to challenge the leaders of the hard right faction of the coalition, people that were predominantly in safe seats, or if they weren't in a safe seat, like Peter Dutton, they had unlimited amount of resources, quite literally millions and millions of dollars, and the support of major lobby groups to back them in. That meant that these were hard and difficult choices that we as the GetUp movement made together in terms of who we targeted. So we made things difficult for ourselves, but with good reason. We wanted to challenge the hard right. We were successful in areas like Warringah and challenging Tony Abbott, who is, you know, climate change denier number one in Australia and has been for many, many years. And so that's significant. In other places...
It's a big call.
Well, I think in terms of how he has been able to coordinate across the coal lobby, across Parliament, he not only is his position, of course, as a climate denier very extreme, but he's been more effective, I think, than others who share similar values or views in being able to affect the direction of the coalition in terms of winding back the renewable energy target, in terms of making sure that the funding of agencies like ARENA are about to dry up. So we absolutely think that he was climate change denier number one in terms of Parliament, and he's no longer here. So that's something, but it's not enough. It's clearly, if you're in Parliament this week, not going to be enough to see this government act on climate change or act on modernising
our renewable group. So why did you fail?
Well, we chose difficult targets. In some cases, we bucked the trend in places like Boothby in South Australia. There was a significant swing in that electorate against what was a swing to the coalition more widely across South Australia. Similar achievements in other places. We certainly succeeded in mobilising more Australians than ever before, but we didn't see, as neither did the coalition nor other parties, the swing that Scott Morrison was able to achieve on the fear campaign around the taxes and so forth. forth. That wasn't something we'd factored in based on either the polling or our experience in the by-election. So we did try to triangulate data. We weren't solely looking at the data, but we chose hard targets. And in some cases, it's absolutely true to say that we failed to connect with people in those electorates in places like Dixon, Pearce in Western Australia. So we've got a lot of reflection to do there to make sure that our issues are relevant to everyday Australians, because we know the majority care about them, but they weren't salient enough in this cycle to switch votes.
So do you think you actually turned off some voters, blue-collar workers, for example, in some of these electorates? And is it possible to run a progressive campaign or a campaign on progressive issues in these suburban seats where people are more concerned with the bread and butter issues?
Well, I think it's absolutely possible, and we've demonstrated that in previous election cycles, 2016, Longman by-election, other by-elections, that we can connect with people in regional Tasmania or the outer suburbs of Brisbane, places in central New South Wales and the like. So we know that it's possible. We didn't achieve it here, so we have to acknowledge that. We have a bad state of conservative politics as a result, in a sense. So there's a lot of work we need to do as to why we couldn't do it in this election cycle to the degree that was necessary. In some cases, we did, on issues of housing, on issues of healthcare, in some cases on issues of climate change, but not to the depth that was necessary.
So will you have a different campaign next time?
Yeah, absolutely. We're going through a really serious review at the moment with our members. Many people are hosting get-togethers in their homes to bring together people to do that review. We're engaging in research to hear from voters directly as to what happened from their point of view when they, in some cases, were indicating one thing but then behaved in another way. Internally going through and looking at all of our tactics to see what worked and what didn't, because we need to be honest about and reflective about what worked and what didn't.
Let me turn to the criticisms of GetUp, which have been very strong since the election, most recently by Nicole Flint, the Liberal member for Boothby, who says essentially that GetUp's campaign and the campaign by the unions, sanctioned a very nasty set of attacks on her. What is your response to those criticisms? How much responsibility do you take for creating, at the very least, a more aggressive atmosphere in politics?
Well, firstly, I would say that many of the claims that Nicole Flint and other members of the hard right faction of the coalition have made, both recently and during the election campaign, aren't true. So it's always a good place to start with, getting that clear with people. And people that were involved in the seat of Boothby will know that we were campaigning very much on the issue of climate change. Our members in Adelaide and across South Australia were making calls and going door knocking. Nicole Flint doesn't really have a high profile, so our campaign wasn't centred on her. It was centred on issues like climate change. I think there's been a number of attempts by the Murdoch press and the members of the hard right faction to make these claims about GetUp that largely are just don't accord with what happened on the ground. Yes, that was a fiercely contested marginal seat that was fought out. Yes, there was a big swing against Nicole Flint, and now that seat is very marginal. And there were some behaviours by others in the electorate that there's been no insinuation was GetUp, and we condemned those behaviours at the time. But I think some of these claims being made about GetUp are very much self-serving from the coalition in an attempt to muddy our brand.
Do you say there were absolutely no bad tactics by people campaigning on your behalf? We're not talking in terms of issues here. We're talking in terms of tactics and behaviour.
Yeah, well, that's right. The claims that Nicole Flint have made are just simply not true. We've rejected that. There's been no evidence that we've seen to demonstrate that it was. And that when there were behaviours by other individuals in South Australia, we absolutely condemned those things at the time. And there was no insinuation by others that GetUp had anything to do with it. So I think there's a little bit of rewriting of history here by Nicole Flint in an attempt to change the story. She had a large swing against her. The seat is now far more marginal, and issues like climate change were resonating from our point of view.
Do you have any quality control, if I can put it like that, on your campaigning, on your campaigners, if you don't, will you have more next time?
Yeah, look, in terms of some of our errors, we had some mistakes in a calling script in one electorate, and there's some of our sort of satirical creative that we clearly got wrong. We're out of step with the tone there. That's something that we moved quickly during the campaign to address in terms of our internal processes and how we think more broadly around those things and have, as you say, deeper quality control. And absolutely, we'll carry those lessons through to future campaigns. I mean, our campaign was deeply ambitious in terms of the scale we were trying to reach. We managed to mobilise more than three times as many Australians to be part of this effort than we did in 2016.
Almost, how many did you mobilise?
We have almost 10,000 people engaged. This is phenomenal at a point in history when less and less people are getting engaged in politics because they're disenfranchised with politicians and parties. GetUp is growing exponentially. And, you know, that vision for scale and engaging people did mean that at times we missed some of the detail, some of the quality control, and we have to acknowledge that that's not
and
what
people
expect.
And behaviour control also. We're not just talking about ads here, are we?
Well, in what sense?
Well, in terms of the sort of tactics campaigners might use out in the field.
Well, our people were out there doing things like door knocking, going door to door. We have volunteers often who are nearing retirement age or in retirement, who went out and spoke to people at the door about issues like climate change, or in some cases, to be frank, it was personal. We did speak to people directly about Tony Abbott. We outlined the behaviours of him in Parliament, the values that he's brought to that role as a federal politician, and why that needed to change. Those are the sort of tactics our members were engaged in. We think they were disciplined in carrying those out. I think at times, I made mistakes in terms of some of the quality of our calling scripts and mistakes that were made there, or as I say, some of the creative production.
You mean that script in Warringah,
correct.
The drowning?
Yeah, that's right. The satirising climate change, in a way, around lifesavers that struck the wrong tone
and
for me.
And around Abbott.
And around Tony Abbott in particular, correct.
Now, there's a review after each election, obviously, and sometimes legislative changes. There'll be pressure to impose more controls on GetUp.
Mm.
Do you anticipate that this will happen, and what areas do you think you're most vulnerable in?
Well, the coalition have made a number of attempts to try and stop people engaging in politics. There was an attempt last year to stop crowdfunding, to stop charities and nonprofits engaging in political debates. That is deeply undemocratic and worrying. And following a backlash, including from conservative and progressive forces, they wound back some of those attempts. Our concern is that they will make further attempts to restrict the access of people to engage in politics. So we hope that's not the case, but we'll engage, as we always have done over the last 14 years or so, in the Joint Standing Committee on Electoral Matters. We think it's a good forum. There are important debates to be had there when it's conducted in a good faith way, which is how we should be looking at how do we make democracy fairer and more accessible for everyone. And there are questions that we certainly want to raise in terms of the role of groups like the Real Estate Institute, the Australian Christian Lobby, Advance Australia, Right On and the like. So whilst there's been certainly strong signals from the hard right faction, they intend to use this as a chamber to attack GetUp. Really, this committee is a joint committee and should be a full and fair scrutiny of all those actors in the election campaign. And secondly, as well, looking at issues like donations and expenditure caps. What people are forgetting about is that whilst, GetUp had a role in the election campaign, there were other players. I mentioned a few of them, the real estate corporations, the car industry, the fossil fuel industry. And of course, Clive Palmer, historic first in Australian context, is spending almost $80 million. Should we have caps on donations?
Should we
have caps on expenditure? Absolutely. It's been something we've been campaigning for over a decade. We want that to apply across the board, including to groups like GetUp. But we've seen now, I think, some of the worst instances of how that can skew democracy when one billionaire comes along and can spend $80 million to try and further their interest, whether it's political, whether it's a mining proposal in the Galilee Basin. It's not clear, but they're the sort of things this committee should be looking at.
How much did you spend on the election?
Look, we would have spent over $3 million. We were yet to sort of fully go through those processes, but of course, we'll make all of our accounts transparent through the declarations we need to make as a political campaigner as defined by the Electoral Act.
There's been talk of moves to restrict the access to around polling booths to parties or those associated with independent candidates. What difference would that make to a group like GetUp?
Well, firstly, I think that these are really undemocratic moves and ideas that are coming forth from the coalition. The idea that they would shut out Australians from engaging in politics is just not at all in spirit with keeping with the democracy. This should be a space that people can have their views heard, cast their vote in a way that they can be informed by a range of people. We shouldn't be scared of having those sort of debates of information being put forward to people. We get a lot of positive feedback from voters around the fact that they really value getting our how to vote cards from our volunteers on the day, because often they don't have time to analyse people's positions on issues like climate change or the like, and want that information. So moves by the coalition to try and shut anyone other than political parties out from engaging in politics will send us backwards in terms of democratic rights.
Some would say, of course, that you are virtually a political party.
Well, we're a non-profit organisation. There's a range of groups out there who want to have their voices heard outside of political parties. Many Australians have historically become a bit fed up with those party institutions and want to find other ways. From our point of view, I think what brings people to GetUp is not party politics or even federal politics. What it is a driving passion for the more than 900 people, those 900 souls who are suffering in detention on Manus and Nauru. What drives them to GetUp is when they see the IPCC report that says we have just 12 years left, and three of those are going to be taken up by this Conservative government to address climate change. Just 12 years. They come to groups like ours because they are desperate to find a way to find progress on issues they care about. So that's quite a different proposition than a candidate or a political party. We want to find ways, whether it's working through the corporate sector, local government, state government, or federal politics, to continue to make progress, and that's what our movement will be doing now.
One of the arguments has been about whether there needs to be greater transparency about GetUp. Could you just explain what differences there are between GetUp and a political party in terms of transparency?
Yeah, well, we have a higher standard than the political parties. So we in a legal sense, we
there've been changes recently, haven't there?
That's right. In the last term, the standards were improved so that there was a more even playing field. So at the moment, GetUp receives exactly the same level of legal scrutiny we're required to meet as a political party would. So that's a good thing.
In funding, you're talking about?
Or correct. Yeah.
Other areas.
In funding. Yeah. In terms of the money that we receive from our wonderful donors and how we spend that money, they're the things that we will publicly declare. But the difference is we provide further voluntary measures. So we have a lower donation threshold so that people can see where more of our funding is coming from, and we disclose our donations in real time. So rather than waiting 6 or 8 months, we put those things up on our websites in real time. We make our ASIC filings publicly available so that people don't have to go and spend money to access those things. So actually, again, we would say what the coalition and the Murdoch press are saying is just deeply untrue and misleading. GetUp has a deeper degree of transparency than the likes of the coalition, and we would love to see them catch up.
Have you been hit significantly by the ban on foreign donations?
No, it was never a significant issue for us. Historically, GetUp had received under 1% of our funding from philanthropists and foundations around the world who are concerned about global issues like the protection of World Heritage sites like the Great Barrier Reef. And so there is a role there for international philanthropy. But in terms of our funding, we supported the foreign donations reforms in a sense. The coalition obviously used that as an attack on groups like GetUp and charities in the environment and human rights sector. But in terms of federal political campaigns and election campaigns specifically, we supported that ban because we think that election campaigns should be funded by the people. Of course, whilst we receive donations, many corporate lobby groups receive sponsorships and memberships and the likes, which are still coming in, we believe, from overseas. So unfortunately, those haven't been dealt with.
And just finally, looking to the future, are you going to downsize now the election is over? How many staff do you have at the moment, and what are you going to go to if you are downsizing? And how do you see your role when there's not an election on the horizon?
Well, our role is absolutely still to find a way to make progress on the issues our members care about, and that's certainly difficult right now to see those pathways to help the people on Manus and Nauru, to find ways we can still take action on climate change, to protect press freedoms and the funding of our public broadcasters, and to make sure that people who are suffering in poverty are being looked after by Australia, which they're currently not. So that's our task. Our members are best placed to solve that question with us as a staff base. And it's certainly the case that right now, I think a lot of people are taking a bit of a break, a bit of a breather after having given their all in the election campaign. So yeah, we are at a bit of a quiet period. We're doing a lot of, you know, very genuine review and reflection because we need to improve the way we work. We're not seeing the progress we need to see on those issues.
And where are you going on staffing? What do you have at the moment?
Yeah, we absolutely scale up around election campaigns. So as of today, we're roughly half the size we were in the election campaign.
Which is how many staff? Full-time staff?
Full-time staff is around 50 at the moment. So that's sort of where we are as of today.
That's a lot of people.
Yeah, it's a wonderful thing that we can have the ability to have deeply strategic minds running our election, running our campaigns and thinking through policy, thinking through how do we create the change. So that's what they're busy on now. And of course, working with our members across the country to continue to see how we build our movement, because it is people power that ultimately is going to be one of the key solutions to making progress.
Paul Oosting, thank you very much for talking with us today. That's all from today's podcast. Thank you to my producer, Rashna Farooq, and we'll be back with another interview soon. Goodbye for now.
Our theme music is by Lee Rosevere. You can find more podcasts from The Conversation on our website at theconversation.com.